Welcome back to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Barbera. And in this episode, episode 37, I wanted to cover how to be a great money lender. And if you already are one, how to protect yourself. Maybe there are things that you are not doing correctly or should be doing. So we wanted to go ahead and address all this. In this episode, I wanted to start off with a quick little story, which is what prompted me to want to do this, is we were at a networking event that we had spoken at recently. And after the networking event, one of the members comes up to us and says, you know, hey, I have money lent out on a project, but if I get it back, I would love to lend it to you guys on your future projects. I was like, wow, that's great. And then it hit me. I was like, wait, if you get it back? I was like, you know, explain that to me. Well, you know, they're struggling a little bit on the deal and they ran out of money and I don't know. And I was like, okay, well, you're protected though. I was like, you know, you have the right contracts in place, the notes, the deeds of trust. And they're like, I'm not sure. I don't think so. And I was like, okay, maybe they don't understand the process, right? There's a lot of times that it gets done correctly. It's just the person is not very well educated on it. So they don't understand if they did do it or not. So I told them, I was like, well, how did you give them the money? And they said, well, I just wrote them a check for what they asked for and I gave it to them. I was like, oh, so you have no protection. And long story short, I mean, I don't know what happened. This, you know, like I said, it was recently. So I don't know. That's the story, and that's kind of what prompted me to say, okay, let me make sure that, you know, for you guys that are listening, if you're a money lender, you know, that you understand what you're doing, and if you're somebody that borrows money, that you're doing it the right way. I believe that, like we always say, you know, don't do what's easy, do what's right, and that's the way that you're going to build credibility and a good business structure if you do things the right way. So in this episode, we're going to talk about why private money, protecting yourself, verifying interest payments, points. We're going to be talking about, you know, when you get your money back, how to get it back and risk and everything. All right. So we're going to cover as much as I can think of in this episode and give you as much value as possible. So let's get into it. Why private money lending, first of all? The best thing, private money lending is the closest thing to passive investing as you can get. It's not 100% passive, so please don't misunderstand that. I don't believe any investment should be 100% passive. You should still know what the heck you're doing and what's going on. That requires active involvement. But that being said, it is the most passive. It is something that is great for somebody that doesn't have time to manage a renovation, to manage a project. You know, somebody that has perhaps a retirement fund, an IRA, something that they have that's just money sitting there that's not really generating much, you can then go ahead, take that money and put it to work at a higher interest, at a better return in real estate. And it's also a great way for you if you know nothing but have the money, instead of jumping into a flip or into a deal that you know nothing about, lend it on a project to somebody that you know is credible or understands what they're doing, and then tag along. Learn the process, right? You're already bringing them a lot of value by providing them the money, so they'll be more than happy to help you tag along. And take advantage of that. Take advantage of asking whoever you're lending, especially if you're interested, of course, you know, why they do certain things. How did they evaluate the property? Why these numbers? Why that repair? Right? Ask all these questions because it's going to make you a much better investor as you move forward. And like we're going to cover later with as regarding risky loans, it's going to help you avoid riskier loans moving forward, right? And it's going to help you make that decision a lot easier. So that's really the reason why you want to become a private money lender. And when you decide to go ahead and do that, you want to make sure you vet, especially if you're doing this for your first time, you want to vet the person you're lending money to, okay? You don't want to go ahead and lend to somebody that nobody knows or to somebody that is this is their first or second or maybe third flip. That's not enough experience, right? So you want to, I'm not saying don't do it. You're free to do whatever you want. I'm just saying that there's higher risk with that, you know? So with the higher risk, you got to understand, not always does it mean higher rewards. So you got to make sure that if you don't know what you're doing and they don't know what they're doing, that's a very bad recipe for, you know, your money being gone. So you want to make sure that the person you're lending, especially when you're getting into this and you haven't done this before, is somebody that is very well experienced. So you're comfortable that your money is protected. You understand? So make sure you vet the person, ask around, go check their projects, maybe ask them for references of their other money lenders. Somebody that's experienced, has been doing this for a while, should have a nice little Rolodex of money lenders that they could be more than happy to share with you. And you ask them, hey, what were your experiences? What were some issues that perhaps you came across with them that were unexpected, right? This doesn't mean that you shouldn't lend to them because there were issues. There's always issues. Real estate is not something that is 100% guaranteed. It's not something that's low risk. It's something that, you know, it moves, it changes. You're dealing with a house that has problems. Things happen. The market shifts a little bit. You know, I mean, it's an evolving, it's a living organism in a sense. So there is levels of risk. And sometimes things do happen, right? It's just when those things happen, how are they resolved, right? So those are the questions you want to ask. Those are the things that you want to know from these money lenders to make sure that you're lending to somebody that's credible, that's going to always do the right thing. So when you go ahead, you want to protect yourself. You want to do that. You want to make sure that when you make the decision to lend on the project, you are being protected. This requires a first lien position or we'll cover the, I'm already in it. So there's different lien positions, okay? You have first lien, second, third, fourth. I hope you're not going that deep in. But pretty much what that means is that if you're in a first lien position, is that you are literally the only one, the one that has all the priority to foreclose on that property if anything goes wrong, right? You have the first right to foreclose on that property and take it back, do whatever you need to. Or if the property sells, you're the first one to get paid off if anything was to happen, right? So you're the first. You're in the first position. That's the best position to be in. Second best position, second lien position. A lot of times where we've done second lien positions has been on a rehab budget, right? So we have somebody on a first lien position that had secured the property, that lent the money perhaps to buy the property. And then we have somebody on a second lien position that lent the rehab costs, right? Which sometimes is typically is a lot less than the purchase price. Sometimes it could be substantially more. Regardless of that, you're second lien positioned, which means that you're second to get paid off and get all these things. So there's a higher level of risk. There's also a very common time to be in second lien position when the bank is in first. So we've taken properties over subject to that we went ahead and flipped, but the bank was in first lien. So you're second lien to the bank. That's actually, while second lien is still riskier than first, when the bank is first, you actually have a lot less risk because the bank is not going to go ahead and up and try to foreclose just for the hell of it, right? So, I mean, you have a lot more leeways with the bank, which protects the second lien a lot better. So it's still risky because you're still in second lien, but it's not as risky as being second lien to another investor. I hope that makes sense. If anything here doesn't make sense, please, again, reach out. I can clarify. I can break it down. It's just a lot of these topics, I mean, we can literally talk all day about. I'm just trying to give you a kind of 30,000-foot view on this. So you want to protect yourself with those liens. How you do this is with a promissory note and a deed of trust. Okay, those are the two documents that are filed at closing, and they're usually done with the title company and everything. Depends where you are. It might be done with attorneys, depending on what state you're operating out of. But in Texas, it's done at a title company. It's all recorded. It's all put in place. This way, your funds go through title. You should never write somebody a direct check. That the funds should go through title company. So then that way, there's recording. everything is recorded, and it says that you lent these people money on this property, and here's the deed, and here's the note for that loan for that property, right? So this way, no matter what happens, you are protected as much as you can be protected. We'll go over risky loans later. But as much as you can be protected, you are. Where this person that I told you at the beginning of the story, they never did that. So now their only claim is I gave you money for this property, but there's no proof of that. The only proof they had is that they wrote them a check. That's it. But there's no documentation anywhere saying what that check was for. So pretty much you kind of gave them a gift, you know? So it's very hard to debate that and to fight that and to do anything with it. So you want to make sure you have those things in place. Usually, the investor has an attorney, should have an attorney, draft up these things, you know, ahead of time and offer them to you, right? The promissory note and everything like that. And when they do supply that to you, you want to make sure you have your attorney, not their attorney, your attorney, somebody that looks out for you, to check out these documents to make sure is everything is in place. Now, these documents are pretty boilerplate. They're very, you know, basic and they're simple and they should always pretty much be the same. But it doesn't stop anybody from adding whatever the heck they want to them, right? Because they are drafted by an attorney and the attorney works for the investor and the investor could tell them, add this or that, right? You just don't know, which is why you want to have it reviewed by your attorney and make sure there's nothing in there that should not be there, right? That you guys did not agree to. One of the biggest things that can happen is stating whether it's a recourse or non-recourse loan, right? So a non-recourse loan means that you cannot go after the person if something goes wrong with that loan. And a recourse loan means that you can, that now that person, that investor is liable, that if anything goes wrong with that loan, they're liable. You can go after them and they still have to make good on their loan. So you have those things that are favorable or not. You know, if you're dealing with somebody you've never dealt with, you want to make sure it's a recourse loan. You want to make sure that they, you know, their skin in their game in the sense that you can go after them, you know. And then as you go forward, you know, you can decide what your comfort levels are. But there's different ways of protecting yourself. And you want to make sure you have your attorney review them and make sure everything is there. And always keep in mind that certain attorneys, their job is to bill hours. So make sure you get an attorney that is trying to actually help you out and not an attorney that's trying to just bill hours. Because we've dealt with people that had attorneys that were a freaking nightmare to deal with, right? And where that becomes an issue is that it makes you as a lender a nightmare to deal with, right? So it gets to a point where it's like, I don't want to deal with you because every time I do, I got to deal with your attorney that is a pain in the ass, right? And I just don't need that headache. So you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot pissing off investors because your attorney is just trying to bill more hours. You understand? So you want to make sure that you understand that. And if the contract states everything that you guys said was going to happen, then the investor did the right thing, right? If the attorney says, oh, but you got to be careful with what if blah, blah, blah happened. You know what I mean? Like they try to make it so to such an extreme where it's just it no longer makes sense for the investor to continue. Excuse me. That being said, always understand that both sides are taking a level of risk, right? The investor's taking a level of risk and you're taking a level of risk. This does not mean that is 100% risk-free to you, you know, and nor should it be. Everybody has skin in the game. Everybody has a risk on this on the deals. So one attorney, sometimes they want to put every single possible thing that can go wrong all on the investor, where it gets to a point where it makes the investor a little uneasy because, like I said, real estate is a breathing organism, right? It's something that it's not set in stone a lot of times. Things change, things happen. While the investors should still do the best they can to make sure the deal works out for everybody involved, there's a risk in play and there's a risk on everybody. Now, that's a decision that you need to make. Whether you want to put all the risk on them, you want to split some of that risk, whatever it is, it's on you to make that decision. I'm just saying that the harder you are to kind of work with, the harder it's going to be for you to work with good investors. So just keep that in mind. Again, trust and verify not just the investor, but also the property. You want to make sure that the deal itself makes sense. This is why I say this is not entirely passive. Because just because somebody, an investor says, hey, I need a loan for this amount because that amount is 60% of the after repair value, based on what, right? You want to see not just their comps, but maybe you want to pull your own comps. You want to run your own numbers. You want to see the budget. Does the budget make sense on the property, right? And this is why, like I said, you want to go with an experienced an experienced investor that has credibility, because then you can kind of trust that they're not going to really screw you over because they have a whole business and they have reputation and everything, to really take care of. That being said, nothing's stopping anybody from screwing anybody over. We've seen it time and time again. But it decreases that chance tremendously. So you want to make sure that you're dealing with somebody that is credible, and this way you can learn. So when they tell you, hey, here are the comps, ask them, can we review the comps together? Can you show me how you got to these numbers? What properties are you looking at? You understand? Like, are they looking within the same vicinity, or are they crossing over to a whole different subdivision, a whole different area of town? Are they looking at houses that are apples to apples, or are they looking at houses that their house is from 1960 and they're comparing it to a brand new build, right? Like, you want to see these things. So we did a podcast on determining ARVs. Go take a listen to it to see how we determine values, and ask them to walk you through it. You know, when we deal with new investors, new lenders, we want to educate them. We want them to understand our process, because the quicker they become comfortable with us, the quicker we can move on deals, because then they trust us. So we're an open book with every investor we deal with. So ask questions. Why this? Where's the repair budget? You know, where's the scope of work? Who's bidding the project? You know, have you worked with this contractor before? What if this goes wrong? Do you have backups? You know, ask them, like, to see if they really know what they're doing. Because, like, again, things happen in a project, but if you know what you're doing, you should be able to deal with them, right? You should have plans in place to take care of whatever situation happens. And you want to know their process. You want to know their systems. You want to know how they operate, just to put your mind at ease that they have a process and they have systems. And this isn't just, hey, let's hope things work out. Because lately, that's where a lot of investors are getting into, and we keep getting so many calls from money lenders as well as investors themselves that they're like, hey, so we lent out money on this project, but they're underwater, right? They need more than what they borrowed, and the house is just not worth it. And all of this because they never vetted the investor. They never vetted the project itself. You know, when they show me the numbers, I was like, this project never made sense from day one. You understand? Like, those are things that you, and they do fall on you. Because a lot of people, you know, while I feel very strongly that an investor should always do what's right, you can't count on it. And it's your money. And you need to protect yourself. You understand? And if you lose money, it's your fault. It's your money. It's your decision. So if you want to be lazy and not put in that work, then you have to be okay with having a higher level of risk, higher level of not knowing what's going to happen, because you didn't want to take the time to learn or to understand whether you were protected or not. So it does fall on you. So make sure you're protecting yourself as much as possible. Interest points and all that. So basically, points are what a lot of investors, hard money lenders especially, charge up front. So a point is typically, you'll hear, you know, when you hear somebody say, oh, I got a 12 and 2 loan, right? So that's 12% interest with 2 points, right? The 2 points is 2% of the amount borrowed up front. So if you're borrowing $100,000 and it's 2 points, $2,000 gets paid up front. And then it's 12% interest over the course of a year paid monthly, right? So it's not 12% interest per month. It's 12% interest over the year divided by 12 months. And that's what you get as an interest payment monthly. So that's the points and that's the interest. I had a gentleman that he said, oh, I have a loan that's 3-1. I was like, 3-1? What? I was like, what do you mean 3-1? Yeah, 3 points and 1%. I'm like, hold on a minute. I was like, this is insane. I was like, how is it 3-1? Yeah, it's 3 points and 1% per month. I was like, oh. I was like, well, they just are marketing differently. That's a 3-12 loan. You understand? That's 3 with 12% interest a year. It's just that they broke it down to 3 and 1% a month. So that was just a marketing tactic to make people think like, oh yeah, I'm lending at a crazy low rate. No, they're really expensive. You understand? Like at least for where we are in San Antonio, that's an expensive loan. And it was just slick the way that they presented themselves. So you want to make sure you understand those things. Like when they tell you interest rate or you predict, you put out interest rate, it's over the course of a year usually. So it's 12% return in a year. If it gets done in 4 months, it's not 12% return anymore, right? 12% is, you're only going to get a full 12% if it goes out the full year. So I hope that makes sense. Again, if you have questions, ask. Now, how do you become more competitive using points and interest? You got to understand your market. You got to understand your investors. The hotter the market is, the more access to private funds there are. The more access to private funds there are, the more an investor can get better rates and better terms, right? So the hotter the market is, when we first started, we were paying 12-2. But the more experience we got and the hotter the market got, now we are at 0 points and 10% interest or even 8% interest, right? Because lending to us is very, very low risk because we know what we're doing. We have renovated a lot of properties. We've done a lot of projects all successfully. You understand? And the projects that we invest in are always very low risk because we have a very large margin in each property that we renovate and that we get into. So we can demand a lower price. And that gives you, as the lender, a peace of mind that you're lending to somebody that your money is always protected. You understand? Now, that doesn't mean that you can't lend for hire. It's just you got to understand in a hot market, if the standard for experienced investors, let's say 8-0 or 10-0, so 8% interest a year or 10% interest a year and 0 points, and you want 12-2, then you're most likely lending to a higher risk investor. Somebody that doesn't have that experience. Somebody that perhaps is doing riskier projects, right? So there's a higher risk with lending to that person or lending to that particular project. Now, the bigger spread of money might sound very appealing to you, but you also got to see what your gamble is. Are you going to get your money back? Right? Like how protected are you? How much margin is in that deal? How much experience does that person have? Because I've seen investors have a very large margin in a deal, but because they didn't have the experience, they lost all that margin and then some. You understand? So we've gotten calls from hard money lending companies asking us if we can assist them with taking over a project. And when we run these numbers, we're like, yeah, we can assist you, but you as a hard money lender are going to lose $30,000. And they're like, yeah, we know. You understand? So the project had a huge margin because hard money lenders, they make sure to run all their numbers, even though some of them right now are getting very lazy, but they make sure to run all their numbers to make sure the comps make sense, the repairs make sense and all that. But the investors still overspent because they spent the money in all the wrong places. So that being said, you got to be careful. You got to protect yourself. So while it might be more appealing to lend at a higher interest rate, it may not make sense if you're taking much higher risk than what that potential profit is going to be. Now, again, that's on you. That's something that you have to determine. But if you want to be able to sleep at night, lend to somebody savvier, yes, you're going to get paid a little less, but also you're going to have that money turning over constantly. So while on a 12-2, maybe you lend it for 4 months, 5 months, and because that wasn't an experienced investor, they don't have the flow of properties that a savvier investor is going to have. So you lend it for 4 or 5 months, and then your money's sitting idle for the next 4 or 5 months. And then maybe you lend it out again when they find another project later, right? So at the end of the year, what your actual profit is, perhaps it may be, you know, 7% annualized because you didn't lend it the full year. While if you lend to a savvy investor, somebody experienced, and maybe you're lending it at 10% interest only, you're getting a true 10% a year because, like, typically what we do is as we're finishing one project, we roll that money right into another one. And obviously that's what the investor wants to do. But we go ahead and, hey, we're finishing this one. We're about to pick up that one. You're interested in getting into that one? Yes, roll the money right over. Boom, we take it, roll it right over into the next one. So their money is constantly deployed, generating a 10% interest per year, right? So you got to see that. You got to kind of weigh that out as to, you know, I'm getting higher interest right now, but if it's not deployed the full year, what does it really break down to? Versus I'm lending less interest, I'm getting less interest right now, but it's constantly deployed. So over the course of a year, 2 years, whatever, I'm getting a much higher return with higher protection. So those are the things that you want to really balance out and kind of weigh as far as your, you know, where you want to be. And again, I understand that this may be a lot, might come off like a lot. So if you have any questions, you want me to expand on any point, let me know. I'm more than happy to do so. So getting paid back, you can choose whether you get paid back monthly or at the end of the project. We have investors that prefer a variety of things, right? We have some investors, we have one that he says, I love getting the monthly check in the mail. Nothing makes me happier. He's like, I feel like, you know, just money's just coming to me, right? So he likes his interest payment every month. And that's fine. Other investors, they're like, I don't want to deal with that. Especially if you have an IRA, that monthly check tends to hit your IRA account as a fee. So you get hit with a fee every single month, every single time that you deposit something into it. So they're like, I don't want to get hit, you know, 6-7 times. I'd rather just go ahead, lend you the money, and we'll calculate what the interest was over the course of 4, 5, 6, 7 months, however long the money was deployed. And at the end of that time, you pay me back the money plus the interest, right? So it's just one deposit. So it depends on you. It's something that you need to choose and see what it is. As an investor, paying monthly a lot of times is a pain in the ass because it's when we have a lot of projects going on. So it's literally just bookkeeping, right? It's making sure at the end of the month, all right, check to this person, I check to that person, I check to this person, you know, and putting in the mail and the envelopes and this and that and meeting with them sometimes or whatever and sending it out. It tends to be a headache when you're doing a lot of deals. But that being said, that's not your problem, right? That you, if you want it a certain way, that's just what it is. But it just kind of goes back to, are you a pain in the ass to work with? Right? I mean, those things to us is not a huge issue, but to other investors, it might be. I don't know. So that's something that you kind of want to figure out which way you rather do it. Now, we've kind of been touching on it a lot on this, and is the thing of risky loans, right? So you can do riskier loans and ask for a higher percentage, right? You can also do a riskier loan and maybe say, hey, I'm only going to lend you X amount, because you can choose to lend the purchase and the rehab, so pretty much 100% of everything, or you can choose to lend just on the purchase or just on the rehab. Or maybe you want the investor to be in it some, right? You know, where it's like, I'll lend you on everything, but I want you to at least put 20 grand in or whatever it is. I don't know what is your comfort level. Typically, again, we borrow 100%. We borrow 100% of the purchase and 100% of the rehab. It's easier for us. It's easier for our investors because then nobody's in any second lien positions. Everybody's first lien. They own the house 100%. But we build up that credibility. We've built that up ourselves. So that's something that it might not apply to everybody. And you as a lender, it may not apply to your risk tolerance. So that is okay. Just understand that. There's also deals that we recommend that when you are getting into a deal, maybe it's with an investor that you trust or something like that, that is a slightly higher speculative deal. Maybe instead of lending to them, you partner with them. right? So this way, whatever profit is generated, you get a percentage of that profit and not just an interest payment. And you can structure that partnership however you guys want. You can structure that you make no less than this amount, which could be equal to an interest payment. Or it could be that you make a certain percentage of what they're generating. When we first started flipping, that we had no credibility flipping. We had a lot of credibility in understanding our numbers and the projects and everything. And both John and I come from construction where we renovated hundreds of houses. So, but we didn't do it as an investor. We did it as a contractor, which are very different things. But in that situation, we had a money lender, a business partner at the time, that he had been doing a lot of, he bought a lot of properties from us and seen our, you know, what we know how to do and everything. And he decided to partner with us on the first flip. And we did a 50-50 split. So he brought the money, we brought the deal and did the work. And at the end of the day, we split that profit 50-50, right? Now, I would never do that again, right? Because I just don't need to. We have enough credibility, knowledge, and resources that we can not do something that high. But when somebody's starting off, I always tell investors the same thing. If you have nothing, it's, you know, something is still there, right? 50% is still better because it builds your credibility, it builds your knowledge, and you still get some money out of this. You know, you got to sacrifice that time. So as a lender, you can always do that. Just understand that there is no... You know, you can only lend this way and only this way and that's it. No, you can do joint ventures. You can, which people call them JVs, right? You can do that with an investor and partner with them on the property and then say, okay, I'll bring the money, you do the work. Let's get this done together. And, you know, we share in the risk, but we also share in the rewards. So if it's a slightly riskier deal, but the rewards could be potentially big, you want to share in that reward and not just get a flat fee on it, right? Not just get an interest payment when the profit could be substantial. So that is something that you want to go ahead and kind of determine for yourself, have that conversation with the investor and see how that plays out. So right now we're doing a big development for us. We're building three houses and we've never done that before, right? It's riskier. So the people that are coming in with us, we're guaranteeing them on the low end an interest payment, right? That's going to amount to, I believe, like 10% or something a year. And on the high end, they're going to get a percentage. So they're going to get an interest payment and then a kickback of whatever profit is generated, because that's just what needs to get done, right? On this one, we've never done it before. There is some risk involved, even though the margins are huge, but there is risk because we've never done before. But because the profits are huge, we want to share in that profit with them as well. So it's not a killer deal for us, right? It's still a great deal. It's still going to be a good profit generator. But we want to prove our credibility on that deal, right? We want to show that we can handle something of that scope and that magnitude. And once we are able to do that, on the next deals that we try to do the same way, we no longer have to give that kind of kickback because we can prove that we can generate that. Does that make sense? So again, if anything here doesn't make sense, please let me know. And last thing I want to cover is setting expectations. Don't assume people know what you're thinking or what you expect. If you want constant updates, let them know you want constant updates. If you want to be visiting the property, let them know you want to be visiting the property. If you want your money back at a certain point, you know, because you don't want it longer than that or whatever, let them know. Set the expectations very, very clearly, right? Things that you like, things that you don't like, things that you want to see, things you don't want to see. You understand? What are the expectations? Now, there's no right or wrong. It's whatever you want them to be. But if you don't set them clearly, you cannot get upset when they don't meet them. You understand? Because they didn't know there were any expectations there. So you want to make sure that if you want to be notified every time something gets done, every time, you know, a certain milestone gets hit, you want to be notified, let them know that you want to be notified. Because how else are they going to know that you want to be notified? All right? Try to help them set them up for success to working with you. You know? So set expectations. And one thing that I was just thinking as I was saying that is there are times that you lend out money and there are different types of loan, right? So you can do a loan for a year long loan, which means that you agreed to lend them the money for a full year, right? Or you can do it where you agreed to lend them the money for 6 months, even though the interest rate is going to be over the full year, right? You can also do this interest rate over the 6 months. It's up to you how you structure the loan. It's just going to be more expensive for the investor and they may not go with you. But if you tell them, hey, so the 12% interest or 10% interest, whatever, is over the course of a year, but the loan is good for 6 months. After 6 months, you either can pay an extra point for another 6 month extension, or you're in default, which means that you can foreclose on them on that deal at that point. And if that's something that you want to do, that's something that you need to understand, that if you foreclose on them, one, you're adding more fees, legal fees and everything to foreclose on them. And then two, you're getting that project back. So you need to make sure that you can handle the project, right? But where I'm going at is that you can ask for an extra point for an extension, or you can do the loan for a year. There are many different ways that you can structure this. You can do the same thing. It could be a 3 month loan because they tell you, oh, in a month or so, I should be done with this. Okay, maybe you structure a 3 month loan with a point extension after 3 months, right? You can structure however you want. Whether the investor accepts or not, that's different, right? We've had people try to do that with us where they wanted to do just a hard, like, 2 month loan, and we didn't do it because, while yes, we did get out of the property well within the 2 months, we just don't know what's going to happen. You understand? It is just something that you just don't know. Real estate, again, is a living organism. We don't know. Things can get delayed. A refi could take too long. An inspection can take too long. I don't know what can happen. And that's the point. And I don't want to be strapped to something where after 2 months you can foreclose on me. You understand? Like, that's just, it's not the way I want to operate, right? Because things happen, but the deal still makes sense. I don't want you to try to take it from me, you know? So you want to keep those things in mind, but you can do that. You can put a limit on it, and you can say after X amount of time, if you're taking longer, then I want an extra point, or the loan is in default. And a lot of times when the loan is in default, by default, the interest payment goes up to like 18%. You understand? So it might be something that you're like, well, the deal still makes sense and it's just delayed or whatever it is, but now I'm getting paid 18% instead of my 10%. So you're still getting a good return on your money. That recently happened to us, and I'm going to cover that in another episode of how we, you know, how that happened to us and what we did and how we went ahead about it. But those are things that can happen. Those are ways that you can protect yourself and add other barriers. Just keep in mind that you don't want to set kind of like a fail situation for your investor where you're making it really hard for them to perform, right? And you're putting more pressure, more everything, and now you're really like just cutting them off at the knees, you know, by hitting them if there's any delays and any other stuff. Because it will hurt you in the sense that they're not going to want to work with you later. Because they're like, man, working with that person was stressful and a nightmare. You understand? Like, yeah, unfortunately, I said 2 months, but it took 2.5 months. And they were at me for that half a month, you know, or that extra 2 months or whatever it may be. Right? So you got to understand this is a relationship business. And when it's a hot market, people can find private funds anywhere. You understand? So it's a relationship. You want to build a relationship. You want to build trust. You want to set expectations. You want to verify. You want to vet, you want to ask people. I mean, you want to protect yourself. And at the same time, you want to form a great relationship with the people you're lending to. Because then that way you can go ahead and keep lending and keep doing your projects. So I hope everything here made sense. Again, if anything did not make sense, please let me know. Reach out to me. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you get the updates and everything. And leave comments. Hit the little like button, that, you know, that helps our ratings and everything. So But I really appreciate all the feedback I get from you guys, that you guys are really enjoying it and getting a lot of value. That means a ton to us. So I'll keep these coming. If you have any topics you want me to hit, reach out to me. Let me know. Hey, can you expand on this one topic or talk about something that I haven't spoken about? Let me know. If it's something that we have experience in, I will talk about it. If we don't, I'll make one, giving you my opinion like I did on Airbnbs, right? So just let me know. We'll go ahead and get that done. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. And just keep sharing the love. And any questions or anything, feel free to reach out. So thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one.